Welcome back to the podcast. Coming up on EV News Daily today, a sporty VW ID. Buzz GTX breaks cover. We'll talk the next-gen BMW Neue Klasse iX3 and third-party Tesla V4 superchargers arrive here in the UK. Plus, stay tuned because later in the show, I'll tell you what VW are saying about bringing their Cupra, their spicy brand, to the United States. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. It's EV News Daily, your trusted source of EV information for the last working day of the week, Friday, 22nd of March. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. Thanks for watching, thanks for listening. We go live at 5 p.m. UK. That's for Patreon supporters, a way to get the shows ad-free. And before everybody else, go to patreon.com/EVNewsDaily or click a link in the show notes. Well, we love a new car launch day on the podcast, and this was more than that. This is a platform that will underpin lots of cars. We're talking BMW's Neue Klasse concept, the Neue Klasse X SUV or SAV concept, set to begin production in Hungary by mid-2025. It's a striking-looking vehicle, and yeah, this is called a concept, but let me translate that to you. If you call this the electric version of the BMW X3, that's how important this vehicle is as the first one on this, the first SAV, as they call it, on this platform, drawing inspiration from the historical 1962 BMW model, the Neue Klasse name being used once again to overhaul BMW's approach to car design, engineering, performance, and aesthetics as well. So if you like the look of this and you like what's under the skin, well, this move is crucial for BMW. The Vision Neue Klasse X is their modern reinterpretation of what they need to do in the electric era, utilizing a different kind of cells entirely. Let's start with that, the sort of the fundamentals of this electric vehicle. They're switching from prismatic cells to circular cells, 46 something something. That's going to be the form factor, aimed at models with different heights, charging on an 800 volt architecture, and they say at least 200 kilowatt charging, if not faster, allowing for 300 kilometers of range added in just 10 minutes. The iX3, which is what this, the first one off the factory lines, will be, made in Hungary, will have a 25% increase in overall efficiency. They're looking at more efficiency from the motors, the battery, more performance. They say, take everything great we're doing at the minute and dial it up by 25%, and that's how important, that's how good this is. Now, they will use these cylindrical batteries that have 20% higher energy density and 30% increased range than the current prismatics. That reduces weight. It's more cost efficient as well. It has bi-directional charging. So they talked vehicle to load, vehicle to home, vehicle to grid as well, with the first phase focusing on vehicle to home with a BMW branded wall box that you'll be able to get. The concept highlighting a new face. So for our YouTube viewers, if you're an audio listener, this show is on YouTube as well. I'll pop some pictures on screen of the new styling of the exterior that we're looking at right now. A new kidney grille and three-dimensional sculpture with backlit contours as well. So a reimagining of what the front of a BMW looks like. I think the detractors of the recent BMW styling hopefully should be happy with this one. These new concepts, these Neue Klasse concepts that we've seen, and more recently now with this SAV concept, both with the saloon version and this version, is all about redesigning BMW for the future. So I can't emphasize enough how important this is for the brand and aerodynamics being improved. For instance, they talk about this having so much focus in electric world with a 20% efficiency, and BMW's chairman of the board of management, Oliver Zipser, emphasizing that this Neue Klasse that we saw yesterday is a redefinition of the company. The chief technology officer, Frank Weber, highlighting the architecture as the most substantial investment they've made in the evolution of BMW. Well, BMW's invested in developing advanced superbrain computing systems. It's what they've called their little marketing term for this, but it captured the imagination, I guess, at least those following this news yesterday. The point of it being, it's a tenfold increase in processing capability over what they're using at the moment, cutting-edge computing power to reduce the total number of required onboard computers, at least by half. It streamlines the vehicle electronics for the electric era, and it enhances the processing speeds for automated driving, improved safety, more precise control over steering and suspension. And so they're talking about kind of a magic box, if you like, with super brains inside it. And although you're talking about milliseconds and taking, rather than having lots of different ECUs, lots of different computers in a vehicle, and saying, well, maybe they're 40 or 50 milliseconds between them talking to each other, down to 1 or 2 milliseconds, they're saying that this is a huge step forward in the kind of quality of electric vehicle that BMW can bring you. The super brain computers, as they've called it, they say set a new standard for BMW's performance, safety and driving experience. So we'll follow this very closely as production gets closer and closer. And yeah, if you call this not a concept, but, you know, the electric version of the X3, it kind of highlights how important it is for their future and their profitability. Speaking of which, let's talk profitability from electric vehicles. I've seen a couple of studies floating around lately, or things coming from consultancies that say that EVs are fabulously loss-making for all the car companies out there, that they should stick with combustion power. When I see headlines like that, some of them being pretty faithfully re-reported by the press, almost word for word, you have to wonder who's funding these things, because from what we know about electric vehicles, VW have said that their ID vehicles are profitable. Tesla, of course, has just a fine cash flow, thank you very much. That to say, well, all EVs are losing, I think the figure was $6,000 per EV. And I thought, well, I'll click on that link at the weekend and work out what this is saying. But even the headlines looked fishy. Even BMW say, look, our EVs are profitable and will continue to be so. BMW anticipating that their higher end vehicles, particularly the luxury ones like the 7 Series, the X7s, the Rolls Royces, will contribute particularly to their profits this year. The company projects an 8-10% profit margin for their automotive segment as it goes electric. CEO Oliver Zipse expressing confidence in the growth of the high-end fully electric vehicles, predicting a very positive impact on the company's financial performance. They lead their competitors in the premium EV market, with 15% of their total vehicle sales being electric, aiming to sell 500,000 EVs this year, with 15 models they're expanding to. Despite the optimistic sales outlook, BMW does anticipate investments in the Neue Klasse series, which launches late 2025, like I mentioned, to impact their earnings in the short term. But that platform, as I've mentioned already, is all about halving the battery costs, increasing vehicle range, having the bidirectionality that some people are, you know, insisting on or looking for in future electric vehicles, and ensuring that the EVs they make are contributing to the bottom line in a positive way. That's not the case for everyone. I know that some OEMs are losing money, considerable money, on electric vehicles, but not everyone is losing money on EVs, and this is crucial to BMW's profitable future. Here's some news that got people very excited yesterday when it was announced. Cupra, the performance bit of SEAT, which is now spun off, which is the Spanish bit of Volkswagen Group, for those that didn't know, is going to make its debut in the US market by the end of the decade, focusing on producing vehicles locally within North America. The brand introducing 2 electric vehicles initially, an electric variant of the Formentor crossover and a larger TBC electric SUV. So they understand the US market already. As part of their strategy to be a global presence since becoming independent from the SEAT brand 4 or 5 years ago now, wasn't it? So Cupra has carved out a nice little niche with their performance-oriented hatchbacks and crossovers. They took the ID3 and made it the Born. What's going to be called the L-Born, but then it'd be, I suppose, the Born. But either way, L-Born was a cool name. But the Cupra Born, which is, I think, stylistically a nicer thing to look at than the ID3, which fits in with the VW mothership kind of brand image anyway, and design, whereas the Born, I think, was a little bit more aggressive and just a little bit hard around the edges, and that appealed to me. But that's very subjective, of course, styling-wise. They aim to attract a youthful, forward-thinking customer. Of course, I'm, you know, if one thing, youthful and forward-thinking. So good news there that Cupra is coming to the US. All right, next up. Seriously, this is a very serious story, because GM have to have a great year with their Ultium EV technology. GM, according to this Electrek report, anticipates overcoming their EV production hell and have significant increase in production this year. Let's face it, it couldn't be any less than last year. They delivered 76,000 EVs or so last year at GM. But once you strip the Bolt out of that, it's a real issue for GM. Key issues included delays, software glitches, the Blazer, which had to have a stop sale on it, and then have that stop sale lifted after 3 months. Despite those challenges, GM wants to manufacture between 200,000 and 300,000 Ultium EVs this year. Now, that's quite a window to be aiming in. They've given themselves lots of wiggle room in there. The production goal is an adjustment from an earlier target of 400,000 EVs by the middle of 2024. The CFO, Paul Jacobson, acknowledging recently the difficulties in scaling Ultium. The Ultium sales last year were not good. Below 14,000 units, about 9,000 for the Lyriq, just over 3,000 for the Hummer, the Blazer and Silverado are just ramping up now. And production of the Ultium-based EVs really lagged behind where they should have been. Even the likes of Rivian, this article pointing out that Electric did the numbers, and Rivian sold more R1Ss than GM sold Ultium vehicles, which is... like, they know, everyone knows, there's no excuse for that. They've overcome these issues that they had, and now they have to have an absolutely stellar year. Not just to meet the promises that they made and keep the shareholders happy, but to deliver, more importantly than them, to deliver brilliant vehicles for the likes of you and I to buy, cars like the Lyriq coming to Europe, which is, I think, kind of a big deal as GM come back to Europe, and just to have another set of brilliant EVs on the market. So let's hope those production challenges all sorted and we get more Ultium EVs this year. Can we talk plug-in hybrids for a second? How much is enough range for a plug-in hybrid? Now, traditionally, when it's had 15 or 20 miles, I've been a little bit opposed to plug-in hybrids because they don't often get charged if people are not buying them for the right reasons. Over here, we had lots of business tax incentives for people to have plug-in hybrids as their company car, but they didn't bother installing things like wall boxes or even ever charge them because it was just cheaper to get a plug-in hybrid than the combustion car. And so, well, maybe they'd go to the supermarket occasionally and, plug it in, but so many were never plugged in, so they were carrying around extra weight for no reason. That increases emissions of the combustion car they're effectively driving. That's not everyone, and some people use plug-in hybrids nearly all the time on electric. But how much is enough battery range? Because I think when you start to get decent range from the battery, there's a really good argument to make for plug-in hybrids for some people. Wouldn't be for me, but there is for some people. Now, Ford introduced a new plug-in hybrid version of the Tourneo. That is their Connect, the Tourneo Connect vehicle, and they call it an MPV, and that has a 68-mile electric range on WLTP. So it's a 1.5-litre petrol engine with the front-mounted electric motor and a combined output of 147 horsepower, a 6-speed automatic gearbox going through the front wheels. But listen, this thing fast charges at 50 kilowatts, and it's a battery similar to the one in the Volkswagen Caddy hybrid. The plug-in hybrid powertrain offered across the 5-seat Tourneo Connect and the 7-seat version long wheelbase as well is exactly the same, and offering a decent, real-world, well over 50 miles range by the time it's cold and you've driven it kind of on faster roads and things like that, starts to get into a really interesting territory. But let's talk some more. This Autoblog report about the new GLC class from Mercedes-Benz is a new plug-in hybrid version of this. The GLC 350e expands their redesigned lineup. This is a turbocharged 2-litre four-cylinder engine with an electric motor that's 134 horsepower electric motor. So this starts to get seriously juicy in terms of electric power. Battery capacity has gone up significantly. 11.3 goes to 24.8 kilowatt hours. I love things like this because it always reminds me that that is more battery in a plug-in hybrid than my first Renault Zoe had like 5-6 years ago with a 22 kilowatt hour battery. WLTP range 81 miles on a single charge, promising a substantial improvement over the previous 22 miles of range. So better technology, better batteries, motors, and efficiency, a much bigger battery, of course, and 81 miles of range. I start to think, well, as long as you plug it in, that is going to do you 9 times out of 10 clean, green, electric power. Nice and cheap for you as the driver as well, if you charge it maybe overnight on cheap rate as well, or even your own solar panels. This starts to make sense with plug-in hybrids now. And also, the car looks really cool as well. Like, if you want a vehicle like this, It fits in the premium segment, and it has AC charging at 11 kilowatts and DC fast charging of 60 kilowatts. So you're not even going to be holding up people all of the time if you do choose to DC fast charge it. That's a whole separate topic. Let's not get into that too much, because some people think that plug-in hybrids with DC fast charging shouldn't use public DC fast charging infrastructure. But I mean, heck, if it's got the plug and they've bought the car, they're allowed to use it. It might not always be the most considerate if you're trickle charging on a slow charging DC fast charge enabled plug-in hybrid, but hey, I mean, you're allowed to. Just let's all get on nicely. Scheduled for sale in the second half of this year, the 350e's price will be revealed closer to market launch. The base price of the GLC 300 is 50 grand, so it'll be more than that. But again, I think as an option, wouldn't be for me, but I understand some people's use cases. That's pretty compelling. All right, let's talk our headline story today, and that is the VW ID Buzz GTX performance version. I'm really interested in this because I had a comment on the YouTube channel a couple of days ago from someone saying the GTX ID Buzz makes perfect sense because if you're on the Autobahn, you need the power, you want the extra oomph, because I was coming from the angle of GTX in my head was GTI. And so an ID3 GTX, which was, you know, a two-wheel drive car, albeit rear-wheel drive, not front-wheel drive, was analogous to a Golf GTI. And so that, to me, I'm thinking hot hatch, performance, you know, taking it on some fast roads, bit of one-tire fire stuff, if you know what I mean. But in a minivan world, it just seemed really incongruous to say a GTX ID Buzz. But my viewer, my listener on YouTube made a good argument, and I think he made a very good point for why there should be a VW ID Buzz. And now we have one, a 250 kilowatt electric drive system borrowed from the ID7 GTX and a powerful AP550 210 kilowatt motor on the rear axle and an 80 kilowatt front motor on the front axle, which will not be engaged most of the time, if any of the time, I would have thought. So this is adding a big motor to the rear axle and then an optional front motor that will spin up when maybe the rear motor loses traction or you need that extra power. But a lot of the time it will be disconnected and not used in permanent all-wheel drive mode for efficiency. Battery-wise, it gets a little bit bigger, like the ID3 did, from 77 to 79 kilowatt hours usable, so it gets that new enhanced battery pack. The long wheelbase version also gets a GTX version, a sporty version of this, with an 86 kilowatt hour battery. 0 to 100 kph, or 62 miles an hour, is 6.5 seconds, which, for a minivan, is ridiculously fast, let's face it. The towing capacity has also been significantly enhanced. Again, that one of my viewers who was saying, actually, it's all about making this vehicle more rounded, more usable in other use cases. So towing is one of those, by having two motors and a bigger battery pack, enhanced to 1,800 kilograms for the standard wheelbase. That's an increase of 800 kilograms of towing and 1,600 kilograms towing for the long wheelbase version. The smaller battery, 79 kilowatt hours, fast charges at 185 kilowatts peak charge rate. That's up about 10 kilowatts on the ID3 version of this battery. It's a 26-minute 80% charge. The long wheelbase's 86 kilowatt hour battery will top out even a little bit quicker, 200 kilowatts, and it'll get to 80% in about 26 minutes. But again, it's all about the charge curve. We know that, but we like those peak speeds. Cargo space is up to 2,123 litres in the standard wheelbase and 2,469 litres in the long wheelbase version, with an optional panoramic sunroof, the largest ever fitted to a Volkswagen, with liquid crystal technology for adjustable transparency. Also with advanced safety features, including an exit warning system to alert of approaching vehicles or bicycles from behind. It will even prevent the door from opening in some cases. It comes with travel assist technology, so advanced ADAS in terms of lane assist, emergency assist, smoother, more responsive operation, all being improved. It's got the bigger touchscreen inside as well, adding about an inch bigger touchscreen with the new software that comes with ChatGPT, because you need, obviously, in a car to have ChatGPT. Let's talk about where this vehicle will and won't be. Let's talk about range. We don't know. They haven't said, but it won't be wildly different from the existing Buzz range. And like I say, the front motor isn't going to be engaged all the time. It's still a slab to get through the air, but it's not a permanent all-wheel drive system, which helps efficiency. Now, the ID Buzz GTX versions will hit the market in the second half of this year. Pre-sales begin this summer. Pricing, we don't know. The European version of the long-wheelbase ID Buzz can be configured in 5 or 7 seats. In the US, though, for my US viewers, the ID Buzz will not be called the GTX. And that's important because it will still be the same vehicle, but it'll be branded all-wheel drive. It'll have that 107 horsepower front motor, but it won't carry the GTX branding, and it won't carry the optional, or rather the specific GTX equipment and some of the extra red piping and stitching on the seats and steering wheel, etc. The vehicle will be available in long wheelbase format in the US only, which differs from Europe, where we have both short and long wheelbase versions. So it'll be called all-wheel drive, not spicy GTX, which personally, I think makes more sense. Like, hey, this is the all-wheel drive version of the Buzz. It's more capable in every way. It's going to be a little bit more expensive, but give you more performance. Calling it the GTX, only thing I've been told, and I've told myself so many times, GTX means GTI. This is going to be the high performance, top performing. And this is the top performing minivan ever that they've made. But it doesn't really work in minivan format. You don't need, it's a bit like having the VW Transporter that you can make into a camper van. You know, you wouldn't call it the VW Transporter GTI version because you'd get laughed at. And they wouldn't do a GTI version, of their vans, but they would do GTX because it's electric, which is interesting. But I'm probably wrong. I normally am. But I need to rewire my brain a bit for what GTX means. But still, this is very, very cool. Talking of very, very cool things, Tesla's begun supplying V4 supercharging hardware to non-Tesla brands. The first station's being deployed. We rarely get things first here in the UK, but we do get the new V4s from a third party. Last year, Tesla did a deal with BP for $100 million to supply their V4s to the BP forecourts around the world. I think actually in the US to begin with. But following that agreement, they also did a deal with EG Group over here. And those superchargers are now rolling out. So if you were anywhere near Uttoxeter, which is about 150 miles from me, so it's not the work of a moment to jump in the car and go check these out, you can go see some Tesla V4 superchargers with EV Point branding. So you can go and do your Asda shopping. Well, it's Asda Express, and they're investing a lot in charging, by the way. Asda taking over co-op forecourts and petrol stations and adding chargers into many of their forecourt locations. If you want to go see what it's like to plug into a Tesla V4 supercharger, but with EV Point branding, well, you can go and do this. I've got to admit, it looks kind of funky and weird, but I like it. It just feels a little bit odd, but it's awesome. And so we're once again, Tesla moving things forward, surprising people as well. I think they weren't expecting the BP deal, and I wasn't even aware of the EG Group deal. I'd sort of seen the BP press release come through, but selling their hardware to other people just reinforces the fact that, yeah, of course, Tesla's a car maker, but they're also an energy company, a charging company. And who knows, in 10 years' time, they might be making more money from selling chargers and energy to other companies and taking more of a backseat in the automotive world. I mean, maybe, maybe not, but you don't know. But it just reinforces just how many bits of the business they're really good at. The first of those stations here in the UK, like I say, in Uttoxeter, if you're going to go and check them out. And I wonder where the next ones are going to be. We can't wait to find out. Let's talk EV sales for a moment, because you know that you've read those articles in the media about EVs softening on their sales and no one's buying them anymore and they're stacking up on dealer lots. And then you look at the reality and the data behind it and you realise, I wonder why those articles are being written, because they don't reflect the truth that's out there. EU new car registrations, according to the ACEA, which represents the car makers over here, increased their car registrations last month in February, and BEVs leading the way, a 12% market share, 106,000 units sold. Petrol and diesel, they saw a combined market share decline, now below 50% of all cars sold, 48.4% of petrol and diesel combined here in Europe, where diesel once romped home as the king of propulsion. Belgium, France, Netherlands all registering double-digit growth in pure BEV sales. And for plug-in hybrids as well, a 12% increase in registrations there. Only a 7% total market share, but still a combined plug-in share of vehicles that you can get with a plug on the side, you know, on an EU perspective, to be around 20%. Obviously, at country level, you've got some fantastic countries in Europe that do really well. Norway, Netherlands, we do well in the UK. Germany's wobbled a bit lately, but take out that country-level data and go a level up and, you know, one in five cars sold having a plug socket on the side. I'll take that in 2024 because we know the trajectory and we know the way that it's going. Well, the more observant amongst our listeners and viewers will know that I mentioned I had this one yesterday, but the podcast was running long. It was over half an hour yesterday, and I left this out. So I'll pop it in today's news. Isuzu D-Max EV is going to be an all-wheel drive electric pickup truck with a focus on being a utility vehicle. The electric D-Max will have a dual motor setup, full-time four-wheel drive, 174 horsepower, 130 kilowatts, from a 67 kilowatt hour battery. The vehicle has a payload capacity over a ton, about 2,200 pounds, ensuring it maintains its commercial vehicle status and associated tax benefits here in the UK. Towing 3.5 tonnes, about 7,700 pounds, and so it has some decent chops as a working vehicle. Isuzu plans to use the battery and motor system supplied by BYD. So it's good stuff, and it'll be the UK's first four-wheel drive. There is a pickup truck on the market right now, the two-wheel drive, limited utility, as sort of a farm vehicle or whatever, but this would be perfect from a name like Isuzu, the first one to hit the market later this year. As we head into the weekend, what to watch on YouTube then? Well, my buddy Kyle from Out of Spec just did a range test, a real-world range test with four of the best trucks around, and he's already told me that I'm allowed to give you the results on this because he kind of begins the video with the results, not one that you have to hold on to, watch to the end, so I don't want to dunk on another YouTuber. And he said I'm okay to read out the results in a real-world range test. It was the Chevy Silverado EV that beat out the Ford F-150, the Tesla Cybertruck. He has the Cyber Beast, by the way, Trimotor, and the Rivian in a real-world range test. So what did the Silverado do? The Chevy Silverado outperformed with 434 miles is not bad. It's not far away from its estimated range of 450 miles. And the test conducted by Out of Spec Reviews involved the 0 to 70 mile an hour highway loop, starting at 100% and going until the vehicles stopped, literally stopped moving on the highway. And you must watch the video to check out the rather ingenious solution that he has for then recharging them in whatever location, whatever in situ, of having completely stopped. Very interesting conversation around the Ford F-150 as well, the Lightning and the BMS, and how it can get a little bit out of kilter if you keep doing continuous highway full battery rundowns and don't really give the BMS a chance to recalibrate, because it stopped at 6% showing, although it was empty. It was at bottom voltage, but it was displaying 6% left. So which, if it wasn't a, you know, someone like Kyle who is very experienced in driving EVs and had a rescue on the way because he was meant to be going until it stops, that is a situation that Ford are actively working on. And there are ways that you can leave the car sort of mid-charged, it'll rebalance itself, and then you're good to go. Well, the Rivian R1T was in second with 345 miles out of 352 projected. The Cybertruck was in third place. It had still over 300 miles. I think that's really good for a tri-motor Cybertruck. 304 miles at 70 miles an hour, just over the 301 estimated. Not EPA estimates on that, by the way, because they haven't got one. And the Ford F-150 Lightning, as I mentioned, 282 miles, well below its expected range of 320, but Kyle explains all in the video. Well, a couple more stories until we sign off for the week. Maybe I'll do a weekend show. We'll see how we go. But for now, a couple more stories on the podcast. ABB and MAN have showcased a public charging demonstration for their electric trucks, achieving more than 700 kilowatts and 1,000 amps for the first time. The new megawatt charging standard, MCS, megawatt charging standard, does support charging up to 3.75 megawatts and 3,000 amps if the vehicles can take it. The milestone exceeds current CCS standards, which offer a maximum of 400 kilowatts and 500 amps for cars and commercial vehicles. The completion of the MCS standard should happen this year. It's been a while. pull your finger out, Charon. And I know it's very clever people working very hard on this. I'm only joking, tongue firmly in cheek. Will enable charging capacities exceeding 1 megawatt initially. And although that seems crazy fast, possibly overkill, especially the standard, which can take 3.75 megawatts at 3,000 amps, this may sound a strange thing to say. Not actually that fast when you have a vehicle and a battery big enough to take it. And you're talking about commercial vehicle applications. This is certainly, it's future-proofed for now, but it's very much needed. ABB and MAN have been a big part of Charon, the industry association. The implementation of MCS requires considerable energy. It's very important that we expand the grid in all the right places and have all the right people talking to each other, which I think they largely are. I'm sure more could be done, but this is a fantastic real-world test. And finally, as we're talking about very fast charging, a company that I'm not sure I've ever mentioned on the podcast before, iCharging. iCharging has announced the enhancement of its Blueberry line of charging stations, and these offer up to 900 kilowatts of total power, 900 kilowatts of total power going up in 50 kilowatt increments. The Blueberry Plus is the hardware, and it's not, you know, just a single dispenser, single vehicle. It does allow two vehicles to charge simultaneously, and of course then it will do some clever power dynamic distribution between both those vehicles. In fact, it can accommodate up to four EVs charging together in terms of the cluster hardware, with the power dynamically allocated. Each charging point delivers a maximum current of 500 amps, so that enables a single EV to charge, you know, under optimal conditions. There's no EVs that can charge out there at 500 kilowatts, but we've seen very fast charging EVs. Obviously, we've got the new Macan and we've got the new Q6 e-tron from Porsche and Audi, respectively. They'll be charging at 270, and then there's the new Porsche Taycan, and you would think Audi e-tron GT equivalent on the J1 or in a development of the J1 platform that can go blast well past 300 kilowatts peak charging rate. I've mentioned the Silverado with the big, big battery just a moment ago on this podcast. Hummer can take a bunch of power as well. And so this is specifically designed to cater for the German market, actually. And so what they'll probably implement these is one dispenser and four outlets on it with 800 kilowatts dynamically split. That's important because 200 kilowatts is the minimum requirement per output, I think, for some regulations in Germany, perhaps to access some funding. But founded in 2019 in Portugal, Porto, actually, in Portugal. iCharging had their first lineup of fast charging stations, which were sort of 50 watts to, rapid charging standards out in 2022. So not a new company by any means, but just my own ignorance, a new company to me, and one that I'll now be keenly following. And that is your podcast for today. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. As always, if you're one of the Patreon legends who gets this show on the air, we are funded that way by the fans, by the audience, and by the community. So I am not at the mercy of any particular voices or advertisers who want to put their own agenda forward. I love being ad-free and funded by the Patreon legends. I would invite you to have a look at the page if you want to. And if not, that's fine. Obviously, $5 or $10 a month being an executive producer, that's like a posh coffee or two. And thank you to everyone who does do that. And I couldn't do the show without Patreon. I'd have to go get a real job. Thanks to our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, and Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East. National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii. Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the incredible Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel. Octopus Electroverse Global Public Charging made simple with one app and one map, and lease plan electric moments. All the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good one. I'll see you maybe at the weekend, maybe on Monday. Either way, remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.